Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Distance Learning Anarchy Series with Freedom Fiends Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Yo, this is the Freedom Fiends midweek non-radio cast. How you doing there, Nima Vedati?
Freedom Fiends, come out to play it.
I'm doing well, Michael. How are you?
I'm clicking my chromed robot cigarettes together.
Chromed robot cigarettes, yes. Yeah. You have multiple vaping implements, don't you?
I do. I just shoot it straight into my veins. I walk around with an IV drip of nicotine these days.
Intravenous nicotine.
Well, it's a mixture of nicotine and freedom. I just IV it all day long. So this episode is called Overarching Libertarianism. You know why it's called
that?
That's
what we are. Yeah. Yes, because that guy who's just a little more progressive thinks you're just a little too libertarian.
That was an awesome interview. And if people don't know what we're talking about, go to the Freedom Fiends, Freedom Fiends site, the episode below this one, the May 14th episode of the Freedom Fiends is actually just 20 minutes of me arguing with a true believer progressive on a 10,000 watt station in California, Northern California, that covers an immense amount of California. 10,000 watts is a lot, but it's on the shore, so it kind of skips along the shore. It reaches all the way up to like Ukiah and almost all the way down to LA. So a lot of people heard me on their drive time bitching about progressivism with a guy who was defending it like he was defending his family.
Well, you weren't even attacking progressivism. You were just attacking basic statism, you know, libertarianism 101 is what you were spitting.
Well, I actually told him that he reminded me of Rush Limbaugh and Hannity. No, I told him he sounded like, who did I say he sounded like? Not Rick Perry. He's the guy that ran for president this last time.
Mitt Romney?
Yeah, I said he reminded me of Mitt Romney, and he was just aghast. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, it was really silly, and he sounded like he wanted to put a gun to your head, and he said as much that was an okay thing. Well, he said, well, maybe we should, you know, because we pointed guns at people's heads, it made the world better.
Because the federal government did it, Michael. He said the federal government. I taught him that term. I had a conversation with him. What happened was I called him up. He's such a true believer. He doesn't just have a show on that station. He owns the station. He runs. Yeah. And he's actually selling the station. So I guess the market has spoken because he's selling it. And it'll probably end up being all Rush Limbaugh all the time, knowing the radio market these days. And I have it on my calendar to call that station back in 6 months and see who owns it and what they're programming. But he basically was like, yeah, I don't think he's going to be programming the Fiends. I called him up and pitched us to him and said, yeah, we're a libertarian show, blah, blah, blah. And he started asking me questions like, well, you're a libertarian, so do you believe that? And he was asking me all these bullet point stuff. And I guess I was giving him like, I don't know if it was he didn't like my answers, but they were more interestingly stated than I think he'd ever encountered before. And he invited me onto his show. He was basically like, well, I'm not going to, you know, he didn't say he'd put it on or not, but he invited me onto his morning show and did a 20-minute drive time interview. I had to wake up and do it. He literally, his voice sounds like that guy on South Park, just a little more progressive. He sounded like that. He really did. He did. And the guy is kind of a nice guy off air. I've chatted with him before. I mean, despite the fact that he wants to put a gun to my head or have the government do it for him to collect taxes, as he put it. But I taught him that term off radio when we were talking, And he's latched onto it. I think he's going to use it. Like, well, what the what we need to do as progressives is vote people into office who will get the government to put guns to the heads of people who don't want to contribute their fair share. I hope he's saying that. I mean, he said it to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you said you didn't want to necessarily have a session where we're dissecting what was said and what you should have said, because it was a really good interview. And yeah, when he's talking over you and giving you three questions at a time and then not letting you answer them before he starts yelling, it's kind of hard to have a real erudite debate.
Erudite. Well, I didn't, I wasn't going toward starting to do that, to saying what I should have said. Did I say what I should have said?
No. I'm just saying yesterday when you were talking to me, you were like, yeah, I know I should have said this. And
well,
that, and this
everybody and also, like, you know, 10 people posted comments of like, this is great, Michael, but what you should have said is, and like 10 other people emailed me and said, what you should have said is, and like, first of all, I was pummeled by the time of that. When I was over, I slept 8 hours that day, but I had to take a nap afterwards. It was kind of like, okay, show me on the doll where the status touched your brain. I needed a shower and a nap after that.
Yes,
but
you felt dirty.
Yeah, but if anybody who says what you should have said, what they need to understand, you have to listen to it again and understand that he would ask me three questions at a time. I would answer one and get one word in of answering the second one, and he would interrupt me to where you couldn't hear me speaking because he had himself up louder and had some kind of compression software to where when he starts talking, it cuts off the host, and he knows that. And he probably knew that he was louder than me, and he would ask his next three questions after I answered one. So anybody who says what you should have said, a lot of what people said I should have said, I was about to say, and then he interrupted me. And also, anybody who says what I should have said doesn't understand live radio and has never been on it as a guest, maybe as a caller, but as a guest, it's basically you're on a show clock. You're like, okay, it's coming. Go. Okay, we're out. And he had me on for two segments. The end of the file cuts off. He did not hang up on me. I think his streaming feed broke for like a minute. But we only lost like a minute of the show. Like in the recording, there was a blank space for a minute or a minute and 10 seconds. And then it came in the middle of an ad. So I just clipped in that like outro at the end to make it kind of have finality. But he did not hang up on me. He did not invite me back either. Next time someone wants to do something like that, I'm going to send Nima also. But
that might be fun.
But the other thing is about, you know, what I should have said. I've never been in a gunfight, but I've been told that when you're in a gunfight, you revert to your lowest level of competent training. Like, you know, if all you can do is like, look at the front sight, shoot, and duck behind something, and you're really good at that, that's all you're going to do in a gunfight. Right. Even if you've done a little bit of practicing of like, you know, sighting really carefully and, you know, knowing the angles and all the different gun stuff and
dodging the bullets, matrix style.
Yeah, whatever. Like, no, when you're in a firefight of words, you don't really have time to be a college professor. I just kind of looked at it as performance art, really.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what do you think about having a small shut up, Becky, session right now and kind of dissecting it now that we have time and this is our Wednesday show and we don't have time constraints?
No.
It'll be a teaching hospital thing. Not like this is what you should have said, Michael, but this is what people can say.
Basically, you're saying, so you were raped. Would you like to do some like sexual play now that's not really rape, but sort of rapey the next day and and people can watch and maybe learn something about it, about how to do rape better or be raped better? No, man, I was abused by the thing. I mean, it was and it didn't really hit me till afterwards. I mean, that guy wanted me dead. He wants the government to kill me and take my money if I don't want to give it. And he said as much. And I don't hate him. I hate the game, not the player. You know, I mean, he was a nice guy to me on the phone before that. It was really good radio. You know, it was kind of like the fiends equivalent of Alex Jones on Pierce Butthole Morgan. But
in AA, I think they say that the person who harms you is often sick themselves. And so treat them with compassion as if they are a sick person. You know,
there you go. Yeah.
So that's kind of it, man.
I'm just not up for any rape play at the Dungeon Teaching Hospital today. I'm really not, man.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
Besides, we got so much more to talk about. Did you just see the thing I sent you, MSNBC thing about... go ahead and read some of that. Ian Freeman's in MSNBC.com on the front page.
Kudos to the Keen folks for this. This is some good national attention.
Yeah, not just Ian, but a bunch of people.
Any press is good press. On U.S. News, on NBCNews.com, the headline is Robin Hoods, in quotes, Robin Hoods who feed parking meters are hit with lawsuit in New Hampshire. A group of self-styled Robin Hoods who scamper around the streets of a New Hampshire city and feed expired parking meters for strangers has been hit with a harassment lawsuit. The city of Keene says its three parking inspectors have been taunted, insulted, and followed by the group, to the point that one of them says he has suffered heart palpitations.
Oh my God. I mean, I don't
want, thinking about quitting his job.
I don't really want to laugh at that, but yeah, maybe you should quit your job. If you can't stand the heat of being talked to as a parking enforcement officer, I mean, I think there are probably cops laughing at that right now. Like, you know, cops get shot at and get, you know, get bottles thrown at their heads and get abused a lot more probably than parking enforcement officers. And this guy's like, someone's following me. You know, you probably should be in a different line of work if pissing people off and having them yell at you all day, which is your job description when you're doing parking enforcement. And these people weren't even yelling at them. They were just following them and filming them. You should look for a job selling incense or something honest, man.
Something honest. You
hey,
got
man,
it.
Man, come down to my office, man. On Monday, I'll give you honest work selling incense. Yes. I can't do a Jamaican accent, but I heard a Rasta say that one time to a cop at a Dead show as he was hauling off some hippie for weed.
I told my brother-in-law that the other day. We were watching Terminator 2 together, and he was like, oh, I bet you love this because all the cops are dying. Well, they weren't dying, but I was like, man, I don't want cops to get hurt or die. I just want them to get honest work. That's all I want. I want to see the cop, you know, going door-to-door selling sparklers or something, you know, not writing me tickets and throwing people in cages.
Speaking of which, I want to take a little sidestep and then come back to the Robin Hooding to talk about the new Fiends meme that Crazy Rich did that I helped him come up with some of the stuff for. It's on the Fiends blog, and it's basically us envisioning LibPair. We took this giant, beautiful panoramic picture of a town. It looks like Wyoming, but I don't think it is. And put in what would be there in LibPair. Okay, left to right, it's Deborah Jean's voiceover studios and lessons, which she pointed out was bigger than the Freedom Fiends world headquarters. And I said, well, yeah, because people taking lessons, I mean, more people want to be the Fiends than will ever be the Fiends, you know? So, of course, right. You know, I mean, there's a lot more rehearsal studios for bands in Los Angeles than there are working bands who are, you know, signed or make a living.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then there's Ron Paul's Bar, Grill, and Gynecology, which I like. It's like, in LibPair, he wouldn't be a politician or he wouldn't have been one. He'd be a doctor, and he's not really a gynecologist. He's an OBGYN, but they do have some overlap with gynecology. But DJ said, I would love to have a place where I could have a drink before a pelvic exam.
Right.
And then there's a homeless guy. Yeah, he should have made this darker on the sign, but it says, need money for beer, pot, and hookers. Hey, at least I'm not bullshitting you. Which is great because it's, you know, I've seen bums with signs like, hey, man, why lie? I need a beer. And they get more money than the people who say, like, I need an operation or whatever.
But well, the bum is Obama.
It is. It is. What I would have made it said is, hey, at least I'm doing honest work now. Give me some money. Because, you know, begging on the street, while I don't like it, and I think in LibPair there wouldn't be a need for it, it's far more honest than making the government put guns to everyone's head and take their money.
It's far more honest than being a cop. I remember there was a story a while back of cops harassing bums and throwing them in jail for panhandling because it was against some city code. And I'm thinking, they're the ones who are doing more honest work than you, cop. Where do you get off?
Next on the street of Fiend Pair, that's my new word, Fiend Pair, is... this is my favorite in the whole thing, is Adam Kokesh and Scott Horton's shouting room. I picture it like a Christian Science reading room, you know, like just a public spot, like a free speech zone in a world that's all free speech, but it's a place where people go in, maybe have contests, like, you know, it'd be like the debate team, but you'd yell. I really like the idea of Adam Kokesh and Scott Horton's shouting room. And Scott Horton tweeted this, and I have a feeling Adam Kokesh won't, but it's said with love. We love when they yell. We like the, you know, especially Scott. We love Scott. Nothing Scott does bothers me. Sometimes Adam does, but overall I like Adam.
He had the most hilarious yelling the other day that made me lol, literally, while I was listening to him in my car. He was talking about the force feeding of folks down at Guantanamo, the folks on hunger strikes. Apparently, there's a new protocol for the government force feeding them where they, like, put a mask over them, stick two tubes up their nose, and it takes hours. So they're basically being tortured for hours. Right. And they use Ensure, you know, the supplement Ensure. And he was like, I wonder how Ensure feels about that. I wonder how much money they're making off of that. They probably did a focus group, and the American people were like, yeah, we don't care. Let's go buy some Ensure right now. Ensure, the official drink of torture.
So next going down the street is Cowgirl Cheyenne's Decoupage Moose Art, which you really have to be a fiend regular listener to get that. Then there is, this is one of my other favorites, Crazy Nima's Guns and Weed. Ammo, bongs, used equipment. We trade and sell used gear. Then there's William Coley's Islamic Learning Center, next door to and comfortably side by side with Ben Stone's Quaker Reading Room. And then the Freedom Fiends World Headquarters with our pictures painted on the side of the building, and then the giant satellite dish on the ceiling. And then the Comrex store.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, and I'm sure people will say, well, what you should have put was, no, download the picture, put it in there, and then re-upload it, because it's really high res, man. Just do it.
Amen. Do it.
Now, I want to say something interesting about the Freedom Fiends World Headquarters, which is a storefront. There was a guy arrested recently somewhere in the Pacific Northwest for running a pirate radio station that was like 100 watts, and I looked the guy up because I was like, wow. First of all, for some reason, this guy had also been arrested for like sexual assault or something sexual. I don't know what it was. Sodomy. I don't know. But I think it was with an, it didn't say with a child. I think it was with an adult. And I think it was consensual. I think it was like sodomy. He's in a state where sodomy is illegal or something. But but he also, like, he was really active on Second Life. So I went and looked at his Second Life page, and he had, one of his things was like his media empire, you know, and it was like this giant glass building that looked like a Microsoft building or something, like, you know, like it was like 9 stories high and looked like a really expensive corporate office. And he's like barely on radio, and we're really on radio. And in our lib pair, like, we're a little more humble. We're like, yeah, we'd have a storefront with 2 stories and a satellite dish, you know. There you go.
Yeah, man. All I need is a room with a microphone, a mixer, and a bunch of audio gear. That's all I need.
Yeah. Yep.
I'd rather buy a motorcycle or a scooter than have a bigger storefront.
Yep.
If I was in lip hair.
Yep. If you had more microphones, you would just accidentally put phantom power through them and blow them. What'd you do, Nima? What'd you do?
Okay, we are a teaching hospital. So on the Alesis mixer, the power button and the phantom power button are side by side, and they're on the back where you can't see them. And so one time I was turning on the power, and I turned on the phantom power as well. So we had a little bit of extra hum in the signal that did not need to be there, and I apologize.
Yep, and that's all. And that's all we got to say about that. So going back to Robin Hooding, here's what I want to say. Some people complained about that they used the term Robin Hooding, but actually the keen people that do this, where they see a parking meter that's about to expire and the parking person coming down the street, and they put a nickel or a quarter of their own money in it to thwart the state being able to give a ticket for $30 or whatever, $50. So, and people said they didn't like the term Robin Hooding because, oh, Robin Hood was a socialist because he robbed from the rich and gave to the poor. Go back and read Robin Hood, or just even read about him. It wasn't like he was stealing from people who'd gotten rich in the free market. He was stealing from the king and land barons, who were people who oppressed and used force and violence and were not ethical and did not come by their money in the market. So I don't think he was a socialist at all. I think he was a freedom fighter.
He was stealing back stolen money.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Which these people aren't even doing. They're paying their own money to to get someone not, you know, have a gun pointed at their head and have their money taken away.
I think it's a beautiful thing. I wish that existed in my city. I wish in my city there were people that volunteered to go walk up and down the streets and keep people from giving you a ticket. I don't know how they would do that, but
the city's job description for parking inspectors included as part of the lawsuit requires that inspectors, quote, endure verbal and mental abuse when confronted with hostile views and opinions from the public.
Yeah, they should just shut up and do their jobs, huh?
Yeah, they should just shut up and take it, man. Take one for the team. You know, I took one for the team, I think, by doing that interview. That's what I've been saying. It was, I don't ever want to do that again. I want to speak to the world in one direction through a Comrex. I don't want it to talk back to me.
I would enjoy a good debate. So
I'll
next time
you.
It comes up, send me out. Send me out. I haven't been.
You know what I'll do? Next time I'll do it. I won't even say I'm sending you, and just whatever time it's supposed to be, you call up and they'll be like, wait, where's Michael? Who is this? Who's Nima? And say, hey, you challenged him to a duel in the dueling code.
I'm his second.
He's on his second. You have to do it. Or you forfeit. That's funny. You lose if you don't. That is really, I want to do that, man. I'm going to do that.
Okay. Dueling, baby.
Yeah, dueling. Yeah. So, you know, interesting. I had a conversation back and forth with a bunch of people today. It was like five people CC'd on it. And somebody said that they thought Cody Wilson did an interview in PC Magazine recently where he talked about there being a difference between the state and the government. And I said in this thing back to them, I don't think he came up with that. I think that was Ben Stone. If you're talking about the thing where the government is the buildings and the job and the guns and the laws, but the state is the collective hallucination of people allowing it by saying it's good. And then Mark Edge was in this conversation and he wrote back and said, I thought I made that up a couple of years ago. Well, it doesn't matter, you know, as long as the stuff gets out there. So, Ben and Ben Stone and Mark Edge, I think you should challenge each other to a duel. I'm kidding.
What would the weapon of choices be? Microphones.
Kidding. Yeah.
They would yell at each other over the
Yeah. I'm kidding. They're both great, and I don't know who made it up. Now, as far as taking credit for things, I do want to make one thing clear, and I'm not saying I'm not like, these people ripped me off, but did you get a chance to listen to those two little things I sent you of that that other cast, that other show on GCN that has no affiliates?
Which other do you want me to play it live on the air?
Yes. Okay. Let me set it up. Oh, and we added an affiliate today. Nothing signed yet, but it should be by tomorrow or the next day. We got another station in somewhere in Colorado. So that's cool.
Cool. So that makes four. This is from Undisclosed Truth. I've got it queued up. You ready for me to play it?
Yeah, it's what are they called? Go ahead and play it.
They're called Undisclosed Truth.
No, that's what I called. That's what I called the file. They are called. There's some truther podcast that some couple does. Well, it's a podcast. It's gone for a couple years, and is now on Genesis Communications Network. Although they've been on there for like 3-4 times as long as us and have no affiliates yet, so I'm not that worried. But basically the thing is, their opening is really similar in wording to my opening, and I don't want to say like they ripped me off, although they did. We were doing it before them and I can prove that. But what I want to say is, if anybody hears us and then hears them, I don't want anyone thinking I'm ripping them off, because I really like this and I came up with it. And I don't care if other people use it, even in their opening, but I don't want people thinking I'm biting someone else's cool thing. So go ahead and play it. And then I want to play the thing that we recorded for somebody when we were on some other network for a minute, like a year and a half ago, before they were doing it on their show. So go ahead and play it.
Here we go.
Broadcasting worldwide from an undisclosed location high up on the Rocky Mountains, this is Truth Frequency Radio with your hosts, Chris and Sheree Geo.
Yeah, that music, man. That music. You know, I think there's
really abrasive.
If there's any kind of music that's going to drive away the largest percentage of people in your opening, I think is that techno? I know it sounds like what they used to play at gay bars in San Francisco, but I don't know what it's called. What is it?
I would put it in the broader umbrella category of EDM or electronic dance music.
Okay.
I don't know how to what the subgenre is, but
it's really abrasive, man.
It wouldn't even be so bad if it was lower in the mix than their voice.
Yeah.
But it's actually louder than their voice. And so you have to, like, your ears have to dive below the crazy cymbals and listen for their voice. It's not very good. So
he
next
says,
I'm going
to
play.
But he says something like, people might not have been able to even hear that. It was something because we're playing it over, you know, there's a little bit of degradation from how it is on their site. But it's something like... broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless from a bunker in an undisclosed location high above the Rocky Mountains. And now I've been saying something really similar like that on and off for about 2 years. And I said it both days on radio and then discovered these people doing it. And just want to make it clear, I've been doing this since like the second or third Freedom Fiends, like over 2 years ago. And they've been doing it for like a year and a half or just under that. But here's something where I think they got it, because we did a promo for the Micro Effect Radio Network, which we were on for about 6 weeks until they kicked us off for cussing. I'm sure that guy's mad now. He's like, well, you wouldn't stop cussing for me. He asked us to stop cussing, and we wouldn't. And I, you know, we stopped cussing for GCN, but not for him.
Well, I was too fresh off of my time at the TV station to take any kind of, you got to do it this way. Because I was like, man, I finally get to say whatever I want to say, however I want to say it. And that's kind of the whole point of this. So I wouldn't have agreed to stop cussing at that point or change the subject matter or anything like that.
So go ahead and play the thing we did for them.
Right, and this is my voice, but Michael wrote the copy. So here we go.
You're listening to the Micro Effect Radio Network, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the Occupied States of America. Learn more about the Micro Effect at themicroeffect.com. That's T-H-E.
Yeah, anyway. So ours is better, too.
Yeah.
But I started doing that, like, in the first 10 episodes of The Fiends, like, a good 6 months before them. But they are kind of kooks, you know, like, believe everything Alex Jones believes, plus the fact that the Earth is hollow and things like that. So I think they would listen to the Micro Effect because it has shows like that. So I think that's where they got it.
Right, right.
That's
hollow Earth. That blew my mind when you told me that.
Yeah, that's a conspiracy.
Maybe I'm being closed-minded, but that just seems kind of... It seems obviously disprovable, and as if it has been disproved.
Yeah, it's so more disprovable than, you know, even like things about, oh, the government's out to get you. I mean, that can be debated by some people, but... And, you know, whether there are aliens or not, who knows? But this is like the ground you're standing on. It's pretty easy with like 10th grade math and geology to disprove that. And they have drilled into the earth like 18 miles somewhere in Russia. And it's still not hollow 18 miles down. So.
Yeah, man. Oh, well. We're not them, they're not us, and we came up with that thing before we heard them say it, so I don't know.
I actually
know that Michael did not bite it from them,
right?
We heard them later.
Right. I actually talked to Ian Freeman about this, and was like, what would you do? And he's like, I'd just leave it alone, man. Imitation's the best form of flattery. And then he told me that there was actually a guy 5 years ago. Okay, Free Talk Live has been running for 10 years. 5 years ago, some white supremacist guy started doing an internet radio show about white power and called it Free Talk Live. That is way more of a creepy, weird bite than this. And I was like, what'd you do about it? He's like, well, I was wondering about what to do about it. And then the guy murdered his girlfriend and killed himself. So it kind of solved the problem.
Wow. Wow. It's like that episode of Death Clock where Nathan Explosion wants to break up with his girlfriend and he doesn't know how.
Yeah,
and then she just falls downstairs.
Yeah.
Yep. Not that that's like cool or anything, but it's funny.
Yeah. So, you know, I was kind of like, we started out on the radio with three affiliates and we had to work really hard to get them. But I think we're going to have five by this weekend or next weekend, possibly more. But I was like, we only have three affiliates. I'm bummed out. And then I did some research and I talked to Ian and I looked some stuff up on, okay, Alex Jones started on public access TV, which anybody can walk in and do. And usually has no audience when it starts. And
I remember I actually walked by him in the public access TV station once. Yeah. I was interviewing the atheist group in town for a news report in college, in my radio reporting class, actually. Before you do TV, you have to learn radio. And I was interviewing the atheists, and Alex Jones walks by, and they're like, "Oh, that guy's such a douche." And I was like, "Why? He's kind of fun to watch sometimes." And then I walked by him. I didn't go talk to him, but I saw him there setting up for his show.
So did you used to see his show on public access TV?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Late at night in Austin in the college days, we would sit around wasted and turn it to public access. I think on right before or right after, Alex Jones was this like rock and roll clown, like almost like Roxo. He would like sit there in clown makeup and say weird, weird stuff.
Cool.
So public access TV in Austin is like weird and fun to watch when you're drunk.
You know, it's a weird town. They have a municipal motto that the city government endorses of Keep Austin Weird.
Although I think I found out that that's like some marketing company that invented that. I don't know if it started in Austin, but I think there's a Keep Portland Weird thing too.
That's a marketing thing that was bit from the Austin thing. I think the Austin thing started with one person just painting it on a wall, and it became a meme before the internet.
Ah, okay. Probably.
I think it was graffiti.
Kind of like Santa cannot be duplicated.
Yeah, but that's our own thing because you actually saw that somewhere, and who knows?
But
man.
That needs to be the next "Hi, how are you?" the little alien frog, or the next "Keep Austin Weird." I think it needs to
I
be
think
Santa
it should be,
cannot be duplicated.
No, the Freedom Fiends cannot be duplicated.
Okay, fair enough. I guess we did popularize it more than
Austin
it
has
being
enough
in
of
some
their
random
own,
garage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So
although,
Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live.
Okay.
Free Talk Live. Let me finish this. I started something. I just want to finish it. Then we really should break, and I'll tell you why. But Free Talk Live started on one station that was 1,000 watts for 2 years before they were on any other stations. We started on a 50,000 watt station, a 1,100 watt station, an 1,100 watt station, and an 800 watt station. So I'm basically telling myself not to go, meh, we only started on three stations. And 50,000 watt stations are few and far between. Free Talk Live is on two of them. Alex Jones is on four or five of them. And so we're doing okay, man. We're doing okay. Woo-hoo. We're on radio.
Yeah.
We're going to take a little break and go to the market here, and then Nima's going to come back and talk about stuff. All right. Yeah.
Should decisions on what you put in your body be left up to people whose very job depends on keeping certain plants illegal? Or do you believe in freedom of ingestion? The Janome Project is a cannabis science community founded by a leading DNA scientist. Get the app by searching Jane-Ohm on iTunes. The app is only $1.99 and all proceeds go to furthering and disseminating scientific truth. You must be 17 or older to download the app. Search Janome on iTunes. That's Jane-Ohm.
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe.
It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity.
A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe.
There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features. And corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from Mother's ingenuity.
A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's BolaVPN at BolehVPN.net.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
FreedomFiends.com, 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 FreedomFiends. FreedomFiends.com, 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 FreedomFiends, FreedomFiends, FreedomFiends.com, 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 FreedomFiends, FreedomFiends. Freedom Fiends!
Freedom Fiends! I have to step out for a moment. Nima's going to take the mic and freestyle okay. Some pooplication for rock and roll, man.
Yes. Here. It is pooplication. So, yeah. But me and Michael were fighting over what to talk about next, poop or Free Talk Live. My poop comment was, so the Santa cannot be pooplicated. It's in the Fiends glossary, and it's an important thing that we talk about for some reason because it's hilarious. And there's a graffiti guy apparently around town. So pooplicated is not isolated, but there's a tagger that goes around spray painting poop, the word, not the image. But poop, the word, on various things around town. I've noticed that. It's been more salient to me since seeing the Santa cannot be pooplicated tag. And so we have a fecophiliac graffiti artist here in Austin who spray paints poop on things. And I'm wondering which came first, the poop or the pooplication? Because maybe he's just into spray painting poop on things, saw the Santa cannot be duplicated, and just thought, huh, it'd be good to put some poop in front of that. So, not really sure if that's the case, but that was just my little tidbit that I was going to have follow the bit about pooplication. And now I guess we're going to wait for Michael to come on.
Worms.
And there he is. What's
Worms.
Up?
Worms. What's up? I have no idea what you're talking about. What's the topic?
Doesn't matter. Just move on.
Good radio. Good radio.
Yeah.
No, it's good
best.
Podcasting. What's up? Did you have a question?
No, not at all. I was just explaining to the audience that there's a guy around town that spray paints poop on everything. And so I'm wondering,
you mean
if
the
that,
word the word poop or he the, sprays poop?
Yeah, I explained that. He spray paints the word poop, not the image or the substance either. And I'm wondering which came first. Did he spray paint poop, as in Santa cannot be pooplicated, on that tag first, and then go around and decide, hey, poop's funny, and just spray paint everything with poop? Or was that his thing, and then he saw Santa cannot be duplicated and just sprayed poop in front of it?
Maybe.
Maybe.
You know, this is
kind of... The world may never
know. I wonder if anybody's thinking this goes too far, and if they do, I would say to them, hey, the name of the episode is Overarching Libertarianism. You were warned.
I suppose so. But I don't know really how that fits into libertarianism. Maybe we could take it in a
because
property rights
direction. Because you have the liberty. No, I don't mean doing. I mean talking about poop.
Ah, okay. Yes.
Yeah, no, spraying on other people's property is not libertarianism. Spraying on public property, well, you've inadvertently sprayed. Well, you didn't spray. You've let your dog poop in a public park and not scooped it because you believe, well, it's the commons. We all own it, right?
Yeah, that's kind of my snide, tongue-in-cheek thought about, yeah, public property. And I don't know, man. That's kind of the silliness. I do take the anarcho-capitalist line that all property should be owned so that we know who decides what happens to the property. Otherwise, if we have commons areas, then the only way to decide how it's used or if the use of it was proper is to have like political meetings and voting and all sorts of reach arounds that don't directly influence the actual actions, because it's not one owner or a group of particular owners that have the ultimate power to decide what happens to something.
Worms.
Yes, and I guess some people who are critical of anarcho-capitalism, even who aren't statists, they have this thing in their mind where they the argument they have against that is, well, if everybody owned everything, then nobody would be free. Because if you didn't – say you didn't own any property, then you would be at the whims of all the other property owners. You wouldn't have any rights.
You know the weird thing about – the weirdest thing to me about that progressive touching my brain the other day in special places against my – well, I went there, but, you know, he show me on the doll where the progressive touched you, Billy. Where is he touched your brain? He got really livid at the idea of voluntary society. I mean, and, you know, he has he said they have a bump at the beginning for their station that says think for yourself. And then and then they have a punk rock song that says at the end, think for yourself. It's I don't know who it is. It's some crappy band. It's a song about Monterey because that's where the station is.
Yeah.
And then there's something else they had on that station. Like in that 20 minutes, it says like think for your. Oh, they played that song, like some song called Freedom from the 70s or 60s. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like freedom and think for yourself. That is not the feeling I got walking away from that. I mean, his thing was like, let me tell you why the government needs to put guns to your head and keep you from having a voluntary society. That is not freedom, freedom, freedom. And it is not think for, like it's not think for yourself either, because it's like, we don't want you to. We're going to put guns to your head if you try.
Well, he tried to say and make the argument that in slavery days, the people who enforced the slavery were local. I don't know if it was local sheriffs, but he said, you know, local groups of poor white people would get paid to go track down the runaway slaves and catch them and bring them back. And he's like, well, that's a voluntary private organization, Michael. Is that what you want? And I guess my point is it's not voluntary because it's obviously not voluntary for the slaves.
Well, yeah. And when he said something about that, I said, so, you know, you're trying to call me racist. You're trying to say, if I don't believe in the government, I want black people to be enslaved. Or it was something else that was even more like he was saying, you know, you, if you believe this, you must believe this. He was doing a, what's the word for it? Red herring. Yeah,
straw man.
And red herring and straw man at the same time, actually. And then I said, oh, so you're going to go for the if I don't believe in government, I must be racist. And then he said, no, you're using a straw man and you're calling. Why are you calling me racist? And it's like when I didn't even catch that. It was going by so quick until I heard it back.
Yeah, I didn't call him racist. You're rubber, I said, I'm blue.
But I said, you're calling me racist. And he said, I'm calling him racist. That was like. Of any of the mistakes he made verbally, that one stood out the most to me. Mm-hmm. The thing that was really cool that not many people noticed was that I liked at the beginning was there was a only Michael Dean would do this thing. He opened the interview with saying, well, our guest today is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and he's been telling me that I have problems with need to fix my audio, but we're going to go ahead and soldier on forward and see what we can do. And like four people who heard that were like, only you would start an interview with somebody off mic by telling him he has audio problems and needs to fix them.
Right.
But it wasn't like I said, you know, you need to go get the Comrex Barometric Equalizer number 634-21. All I said was, I'm listening to your feed and I'm hearing hum on your feed under the talking, and it's very audible, mm-hmm. especially when there's silence. And and he said, oh yeah, we're having audio problems this morning. And I said, I listened to your feed about 5 days ago when we first talked on the phone. Afterwards, I listened to your station for a little while, and I heard it then too. Just wanted to let you know. And he's like, okay. And then he came on saying, Michael says we're having audio problems, which, you know, I don't have any problem with him saying that. I think it was kind of cute, but, you know.
Yeah, it was quaint.
Yeah,
was
I'm nice. The audio guy.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm the audio guy who tells everyone what's wrong with their audio.
I guess the other thing that really pissed me off about him was he – I hate it when statists do this. They try to get away with saying that, you know, in a voluntary society, you'd have more violence than in a state-run society. And I don't think they have any ground to stand on. And it may be a hammer to beat them over the head with. But if they're taking those tactics with you, I think it's well within your rights to take the same tactics back. And I would just like to point out that governments have killed more people than anybody else. I mean, you can bring up the democide statistics, you know, over 200 million people killed by governments outside of war, people killed by their own governments, and then just bring up the war statistics. You know, he was going off about union busting, and yeah, that was horrible, but it pales in comparison to the millions of people weren't killed
in
union
busting. Well, it also was backed by the government, and he conceded that. That was like the only point I made that he said, well, yeah, that happened, but blah, 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 you know?
Right.
And I think it kind of shocked him when I said, I'm not against unions in general as a thing. I just think they get too big and turn into the mafia. You know, I don't think he can conceive of the fact that a libertarian might not be against the idea of a voluntary association of workers. You know?
Right, right, right. Yeah, I mean, I guess the key with everything is that it's voluntary, that there's no aggression. You know, those
are the
same thing.
I thought the key was moderation to everything, to being a moderate.
No.
Speaking of moderates, I want to talk about the most intriguingly named political party ever. There is an actual party in Canada called the Progressive Conservative Party.
What's their platform?
They are centrist conservatives. I don't know, just the name of it. Just I'm kind of like, you know, it's the gay homophobes to me. I don't know. if you're in a left-right paradigm, I mean, really, it's the opposite of the opposite, defining the whole thing.
They're the self-hating progressives.
Yes, self-hating progressives.
Nah.
Let's get it started. Let's get it started. Did you know that song was originally called Let's Get Retarded, but they changed it to make it suitable for radio play?
Yes, yes. That's why I didn't play it at the Tard Dance, because I thought some people might know that and be like, hey, that's not cool, man.
So Ian Freeman, this is kind of funny. Ian Freeman has a Google phone number on his Android chromed robot turret or whatever he uses. I don't know if it's a cell. It was some kind of cell phone. I didn't know this about Google, but with Google, the first time you call somebody at a Google number, you know, it says, please leave your name and the person will try to get the person for you. And you say, you know, this is Nima Vidati. And then it rings through and tries to get a hold of them. But then every time you call that Google number from your number, it plays that recording. It says, you know, Ian Freeman, you have a call from Nima Vidati. You know, whatever you said, it's a recording of you saying it. I usually call people from my home phone, but I was out taking my cat in for drugging and trimming. And there's the picture for today's podcast is our cat drugged. He's on vet drugs. It's doctor appointed vet drugs. But he's sticking his tongue out and he looks kind of crazed when we brought him back. But he actually looks like that when he's not on drugs a lot. But Ian said that because I was making calls from the cell phone while I was out and DJ was driving and we were driving to take the cat in before she went to work and I dropped her off. And Ian said that because I've only called him a few times from the cell phone. But the first time I called him from that cell phone, I called him and said, Ian, I said, Ian, you have dead air right now, because the LRN stream was down. And then I hung up, like I thought I left a message. And Ian said, every time I call him now, it says, you have a call from Ian. You've got dead air now. Would you like to accept this call?
I bet he always accepts the call.
Yeah, and laughs. And
oh, crap.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you definitely want to talk about the history of bow ties?
Yeah, if you want.
Yeah, find that in...
I found it.
Even, you know, we always make jokes about bow tie libertarians. And Tucker Carlson is one, like, basically a kind of conservative Republican, but he's a statist. Some people call him a fake libertarian, but even he wore bow ties. So read a bit about bow ties here, Nima Vidati. Do you own one?
Yes.
Do you have a bow tie?
No, I wanted to. When I was anchoring in Wyoming, I'm subscribed to the Mises store, Mises.org. So they would send me, oh, we're selling this and this. And I've never bought anything from there. But at one point, I was going to buy the Ludwig von Mises bow tie and wear it on air and be like, ha, nobody would have known what it said or meant, but it basically had the LV MI little logo on it, and it's on a field of like navy blue. And I thought, yeah, it'd be cool to wear a bow tie, but I don't think I have the body type for it. I think you got to be kind of like skinny and white or something.
Skinny and kind of weird looking.
Yeah.
You can be weird and handsome looking, or weird and not handsome, but you have to be kind of weird and kind of skinny to pull it off.
Yes, yes. So Tucker Carlson was known for wearing bow ties. And apparently in Curb Your Enthusiasm, somebody made a crack at Larry David, who was wearing a bow tie, and called him Tucker Carlson. To its devotees, the bow tie suggests iconoclasm of an old world sort, a fusty adherence to a contrarian point of view. The bow tie hints at intellectualism, real or feigned, and sometimes suggests technical acumen, perhaps because it's so hard to tie. Bow ties are worn by magicians, country doctors, I'm just a simple country doctor, lawyers and professors, and by people hoping to look like all the above. But perhaps most of all, wearing a bow tie is a way of broadcasting an aggressive lack of concern for what other people think. Is it though?
I mean, that
kind of defeats the whole paragraph to say an aggressive lack of concern for what other people think, because obviously you have an aggressive concern that people think you're an intellectual and or have some kind of technical acumen is what he
says. That's interesting. There's in the movie State and Main, which is one of my favorite movies, and it's written by God, who's that playwright? He wrote the new Phil Spector movie. David Mamet, who is a gun lover. He's one of the only ones in Hollywood that's somebody in Hollywood, and he loves guns, and he's open about it. In the movie State and Main, in which Alec Baldwin plays a similarly famous movie star, and it's about 15 years ago, and he's a lot younger and skinnier, and he's still a good-looking guy, but in it, he's basically, you know, like a 35-year-old movie, big movie star who likes slightly underage girls as a hobby.
And that's a hobby
that kind of plays into the movie. Like, you know, he gets arrested for sleeping with a girl who's like 16 or 17. And, and the sheriff comes to arrest him. And, you know, his like the producer from the movie, from the scene walks out and the sheriff's like, well, you better get a lawyer. He says that to Alec Baldwin's character, and Alec Baldwin, like three of the guys working on the movie, you know, the executives that are there on location, they all go, I'm a lawyer, all at the same time. And then one of them like walks in the other room and comes back with this big thick law book and starts quoting the law on statutory rape and saying, you know, well, this is not a case because nothing happened and blah, blah, blah. And the sheriff says, counselor, do you always travel with the statutes on statutory rape? And he doesn't have an answer. I'm sure he's thinking, yeah, when I'm working with this guy, but he doesn't say it. But in that movie, there's a country doctor who wears a bow tie, and Philip Seymour Hoffman's character is asking the guy for advice. And the country doctor's like, you know, you really shouldn't be asking me for advice. I wear a bow tie. A normal tie points down towards the genitals to enhance the look of virility. A bow tie points up to the ears to make you look more laughable. And son, I don't give advice. All I do as a country doctor is deliver babies and hold people's hands while they die.
Wow. Yes. So bow ties, yeah. Man, I don't know. Not for me, but some really cool libertarians and anarchists wear them. I mean,
classical musicians and clowns wear them.
They do, yeah. And Jeffrey Tucker wears one, and I'm pretty sure Murray Rothbard wore one. I mean,
classical,
at least in my head, he does.
Classical libertarians wear them while they perform in the libertarian orchestra.
Is that it? Well, Jeffrey Tucker's also really into music and classical music, so maybe that's why he wears it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Isn't he a college professor, though, at Mises?
No, I don't think he works with the Mises folks at all anymore. No, he used to be. Now he runs or is a big wig in Laissez-Faire Books, I think is the name of the website. And so he kind of does his own thing now, independent of Mises.org.
Laissez-Faire Books actually helped out Kofi, I think, with some equipment at one point.
Good.
So I wanted you to play a clip I just sent you. It's this really funny thing. It was inspired by the picture that I put up of the Cuss Dump 3000, keeping the Freedom Fiends radio friendly since 2013. It's actually this really retro looking. It's old rack mounted satellite control equipment from 1964. It's like the U.S. Navy Department of Scrutinizing on the Russians or something. And but I just said it's the Cuss Dump. It's how we keep cuss friendly. We actually keep cuss friendly with something called the 25/7 system interface, which is a giant $4,000 piece of rack mount. GCN has five of them, and they're controlled with an internet interface that both of us have. And they basically build a 7-second delay in real time. It's kind of voodoo, man, but it works. It's really weird. Like, it used to be for a 7-second delay on radio, you had to start your show clock 7 seconds before the hour. With this, you start at the top of the hour, the ads come in at the right time, the bumps come in at the right time, the liners come in at the right time. But when you start talking, it builds, which is why, if you notice, people never take a caller in the first 20 seconds, because it takes 20 seconds to build.
They'll introduce the caller and be like, "Hey, welcome back to such and such show." Even if have on the line, blah, blah, blah.
Even if they carry them over from the previous segment, you know, if you listen to Free Talk Live and now we do this, they will always, always talk for 20 seconds before you put them on the on live, because you know, you can control yourself. We can control ourselves for 20 seconds, not much more than that. But we don't know the caller. Even if we know the caller, we don't know what they're going to say. And, you know, people could lose their license and we could lose our show. So no one's going to cuss on the Fiends and get it on the air.
Right. And it seems like maybe part of the way it works, or part of the way I think of it in my head, is like, if you're a DJ and you're playing a song and you're playing the same song on both tables, you slow one down, like, say, 3%, you know, it's going to be slower, so it'll be at a different point in time. That's kind of maybe how the delay gets built, is it time stretches you to make your actual real-time audio slower, so that if somebody does say something, it has that other point to point to.
It actually mostly time stretches the spaces, and that's how it remains sounding natural. But there is so much weird voodoo gear involved in terrestrial radio, because Nima and I now get the BSW catalog and we keep it in the bathroom for bathroom reading. It's total
the best
gear porn.
Bathroom reading.
I mean, you know, the $4,000 things in there are some of the cheaper things. I mean, they have stuff, put it this way, they have stuff in there that costs $45,000 and they list the price. They have other stuff that's so expensive, they say call for price, you know, and it's not because the price fluctuates. It's because, like, well, you won't balk at $45,000, but this other thing costs so much, we want to get you on the phone if you're interested in it, you know.
But of course, that's stuff for like the engineers who run an FM station and needs to get the signal out into people's cars. You know, that's not like talking into a microphone, into a mixer or anything.
But they actually have this other thing, 25/7 systems also, which I like the name, because 24/7 means all the time, and 25/7 I guess would mean more hours of the day than all the time, which is how it actually works. It creates time out of the same time somehow, but. They also have this other box that's about $4,000 or $5,000 that in real time can stretch the length of a show. It's probably similar technology, but it's for a different purpose, and it's dedicated, and everything's dedicated in radio. Like, you buy one box for one thing and one box for another thing, and they all come with software interfaces. But this other thing will take, like, let's say you've got 29 and a half minutes of programming for a 30-minute program, it'll stretch it to 30 minutes without sounding weird. Or if you've got 31 and a half minutes and need to stretch it to 30, it'll stretch it down to 30 without sounding weird or compressed at all. So pretty cool stuff.
The beauty of technology, man. I mean, at the press of a button, you can do things that would have taken tons and tons of work, like re-recording the show for different markets or broadcasters. You just press a button, and then the same show can be played on different formats with different time.
Well, what that would have taken back in the day is a lot of time and two reel-to-reel tape recorders and razor blades and tape. Literally, that's how they used to do
that. Back in the day, even before non-linear audio editing. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Well, tape is actually non-linear editing, because you can take...
Oh, I guess so. Huh.
You know, if you've got, like, section A, B, C, and D, you can take out C and and then it just goes together. So it goes A, B, D. That is nonlinear. Linear editing, and why they call nonlinear editing that, and why it was a revelation with computers. The original video editing equipment was hardware where you basically had three decks. You had two play decks and a third deck and a controller wheel. And you would record source, you would take source material from deck A and deck B and record it to deck C, and that would be your first clip. And then you would take more and put in the second clip, and then the third clip, and then the fourth clip. And it was linear in that if you later decided you had to remove B, you had to start all over again.
Right, right. And isn't that where we get the term B-roll? Because the B deck would always have, like, you know, your background footage and different shots that aren't really the principal shots.
Dancing
and your
midgets.
A-roll
dancing,
would be your
dancing
interviews
mariachi
and your stand-ups.
Midgets.
I guess
well,
so.
Well, in the Guns and Weed, not Guns and Weed, in DIY or Die, if you look at the DVD extras, there is an interview I did about the movie at a Los Angeles public access channel where they called me and asked me to come in and do an interview about it. And they had a green screen, and I'd never seen a green screen. I'd heard of them, but I'd never seen one in real life. And they had a green screen that worked in real time with hardware, not software. And
yeah.
They, you know, I was like, wow, can you put something behind me while I do the interview? And they're like, I guess. I mean, sure. What do you have? And I looked up on the monitor that they had in the control room, and there was a still frame of something that they'd had in there earlier in the day. And it was a bunch of midgets doing mariachi music in like full mariachi regalia. And I was
like, that's it. That's definitely
like,
it.
I did. I pointed at it, and I was like, that's it, man. I was gesticulating. And everyone there except me was Mexican. And I think they were a little insulted, but they were like, okay, man, it's your interview.
And you were just so excited to be taller than everybody behind you.
I never thought of that, but you're probably right. But yeah, and I brought a VHS tape, and I had them tape the show. No, I taped it later off of TV when it showed on public access, and then like put it on the DVD extras of DIY or Die. It's me
nice.
Giving a really serious interview for about 15 minutes with silent dancing Mexican mariachi midgets behind me.
Oh, I gotta see that, man. That sounds awesome.
Worms.
A beautiful piece of Michael Dean memorabilia. Yeah, back at TV stations I worked at, that's the way they do green screens. They do it in real time. There's probably software that does it now, but it's done through a giant video mixing board that high school kids operate in the back.
And anything now in a radio station that is hardware with software in it. And back then right. it was hardware only. It was like, you know, a video card. It wasn't a computer in the sense they are now, but you know, the Comrex is basically a dedicated Linux computer. I mean, it's a box with three inputs and four outputs or whatever, like four inputs and one output and a power button, and a Cat5 cable connection. But you know, and it looks like a modem or something, but it's actually inside of it. It has a computer and it has software, but it's dedicated to that task and configured to do only that task and do it really well.
Right.
And the same, I'm sure, with that 25/7 software. I mean, it's probably, I've seen a picture of it. It's like two rack spaces high. It's a big unit, big, heavy, you know, rack mount unit. Probably most of what's in it, other than a computer, is tons of memory, you know, so it can take the time and loop it and save it and dump it when you need it.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing stuff, man. Technology is a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful tool, and it helps
it's
us
a beautiful
to
woman.
Fight tyranny.
It's a beautiful woman
that I want to touch
with,
and lick.
With it's a beautiful older woman with that like that analog feel, but with the new wife smell.
The new wife smell. What is the new wife smell?
I don't know, man. You had one. Yeah, I mean, you kind of still have one. They say newlyweds are the first year, but you know, I don't know if it changes after that. And I'm not saying there's an old wife smell. Of course not. But so play this thing I just sent you. Speaking of technology, it's this. Really funny. Someone posted it as a comment to our, you know, fiend cuss dump 3000 analog technology FACO picture. Someone posted the retro encabulator, and this is a it's basically humor for engineers, and it's an engineer in a suit It totally works by audio, though. It's actually based on a paper that was written like 40 years ago.
Well, you actually sent me the wiki entry for Turbo Encabulator, so I don't have any media to actually
see
play.
If it's, well, go to the bottom of that page and see if it's got the YouTube link for the Turbo Encabulator. It should be there.
I'll do a control find for YouTube. Ah, here we go.
Yeah.
Yes. On April Fool's Day 2013, Hank Green released a SciShow episode on YouTube entitled The Retro Proto Turbo Encapulator.
It's all BS, but it looks like a corporate, you know, like what they call an industrial corporate film that would be like, you know, GE would make these to show to some investor in Japan of like, here's the technology we're selling for $80 million and why you should have it. But it's for something that doesn't exist and it's all buzzwords and BS. But he does use the names of real companies in it for like the real aspects of things that they build. Like, you know, if it's the jet propulsion part, he'll mention a jet propulsion company, but the whole thing is BS and it's pretty funny.
All right, here we go.
Roll it.
Hello, and welcome to this special edition of SciShow Breaking News. For many years, research has been proceeding on a line of automotive products that establishes new standards for quality, technological leadership, and operating excellence. With the consumer market as an end goal, work has been proceeding on the crudely conceived idea of an instrument that would not only provide inverse reactive current for use in unilateral phase detractors, but would also be capable of automatically synchronizing cardinal gram meters. That's right, it's finally here. The Retro Proto Turbo Encabulator. Now, basically, the only new principle involved is that instead of power being generated by the relative motion of conductors and fluxes, it's produced by the modal interaction of magnetoreluctance and capacitive directance. Now, the original machine had a base plate of pre-fan.
That's the new version of it. The old version of it is way funnier, man. Let me send you this link. Yeah, okay. That's you got to get the old guy doing it. Oh wait, this isn't it. There's a bunch of these. Okay, I like the old guy's voice.
How many turbo encapulators are there, man?
Well, it's based on a paper that someone did, so I think everyone's done their version of it. But the one I just sent you isn't a fast-talking guy, and it's better. This is the one, man, the one that Paul Gray put up. This is the one. Yeah, this is the one you want. Radio. All right, play the
radio.
Play the last one I sent you. I'll be right back.
Okay.
Here at Rockwell Automation's world headquarters, research has been proceeding to develop a line of automation products that establishes new standards for quality, technological leadership, and operating excellence. With customer success as our primary focus, work has been proceeding on the crudely conceived idea of an instrument that would not only provide inverse reactive current for use in unilateral phase detractors, but would also be capable of automatically synchronizing cardinal gram meters. Such an instrument comprised of Dodge gears and bearings, Reliant electric motors, Allen Bradley controls, and all monitored by Rockwell software is Rockwell Automation's Retro Encabulator. Now basically, the only new principle involved is that instead of power being generated by the relative motion of conductors and fluxes, it's produced by the modal interaction of magnetoreluctance and capacitive directance. The original machine had a base plate of prefamulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fam. The lineup consisted simply of six hydrocoptic Marzal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal Lotus O deltoid type placed in panendermic semi-boloid slots of the stator. Every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the gram meters. Moreover, whenever fluorescent score motion is required, it may also be employed in conjunction with a drawn reciprocation ding alarm to reduce sinusoidal depleneration. The retro encabulator has now reached a high level of development, and it's being successfully used in the operation of Milford trunnions. It's available soon wherever Rockwell Automation products are sold.
We'll be back. We got to go masturbate our embiotic fluids.
Yeah.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker podcast. The market in free liberty media is overwhelming these days. With such a selection, what would entice a freedom seeker to spend precious time listening to an old bullet-scarred liberty warrior from an age gone by? Would homespun logic and down-to-earth explanations of economics tickle your attention? How about a truly original view of that ugly old dragon, the state? I'll teach you the difference between the government and the state, why the government is nothing without the state, and how to dissolve the state while remaining peaceful and even calm. And we have a forum, and it's got gardening tips. I knew the state was a losing proposition decades before that was cool. Check out the Bad Quaker podcast at badquaker.com. That's BADQUAKER.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Freedom Fiends! Helping the helpless! Freedom Fiends! Saving the universe! Freedom Fiends! Doing the things that I've
taken heard. The world from the state, fighting the forces of hate!
Freedom Fiends! Helping the helpless! Freedom Fiends! Kicking the hornet's nest! Freedom Fiends! Doing the things that I've heard.
Keeping the tasers away! The truth today, yeah, we will not force you to stop in the cops on the block for the fiends on the block. Ain't never gonna stop in the glass, go blow.
Yo, yo, wiggity, wiggity, woo, Nima the Dottie. Yeah, we're recording. I just decided to start without you. But I just all I did was said wiggity wiggity woo.
Okay, okay. That's okay. I'm still seduced from before, so no worries.
Speaking of technology, man, leaving Skype is like leaving an abusive lover who stalks you and follows you around.
Ugh, I hate it when stuff's like that, man. Yeah, Skype so annoys not, the crap
so
out of me.
So not the market.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess not. I just feel like the market will speak because people will stop using Skype, especially as Opus gets bigger.
Fiend Phone.
And there's more alternatives. Fiend Phone. And there's Fiend Phone. Yes.
Fiend Phone is in beta 0.2 now. And I'm not even going to say what that is. Just I'm going to leave it at that, man. We got a programmer working on it. Her name is Anne Kapistan. And Vaslav helped out a little bit with some advice. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's going to be good, man. It's going to be good. So Skype, man. We had a Skype phone number because we used to take calls. And now we take calls through Genesis Communications Network. And, you know, the way that they work, too, is like I don't even have to push anything. I can say code words and they'll like take calls and cut calls. And Nima can do that, too. I mean, how dangerous is it to give Michael Dean the power to not only speak to the world in one direction to a lot of people, but then when it speaks back to him, he can be like, off with that call. And someone whose job, who's being paid to sit there and keep him from cussing and taking cut off phone calls will like do my bidding and just,
yes.
I'm not saying the guys are minions. We love them and they're smarter than us, but you know, the little GCN elves, but it's so weird, man. It's kind of like nightmares I've had of cool things, like powerful dream nightmares where I just can say, make it go away. And then someone isn't talking to me anymore. It's so cool, man. It's kind of like lip hair.
Yes.
Property rights.
Exactly. It's not libido dominante because it's your show. You own it. So you're not dominating anybody who didn't willingly call. But you can cut them off and say, get off my property.
But you know, we're going to get callers that don't understand that, who after they get hung up on it are going to follow us around like stalker lovers because they hate it. Like, you cut me off your radio.
Yeah, people don't get that, man. You have free speech, but that means you have the right to pursue your own avenues of speech, not that you have the right to speak on somebody else's forum.
Yeah, man, if someone doesn't like it, go get your own radio show.
Yeah, get your own radio show, rent a hall.
And that's easier said than done to get your own radio show, but really, if I can do it, I wouldn't say anybody can do it, because I'm a really hard worker and I'm really smart, but, you know, A lot of people are surprised that we got a radio show, especially like people that don't know you but know me. They're like, they let Michael Dean on the radio like every week, like on real radio at more than one station. Why? You know,
well, if all you want to do is speak freely, you don't even need a radio show. You can just videotape yourself in your car and post it to YouTube, or buy a domain and upload MP3s, or not even do that. Just go to like one of those radio websites where you basically pay them to put up your stuff and have podcasts that way, man. There's so many ways now. So the free speech argument against, you know, ANCAPs that, you know, well, everybody would own the property, so how would you have the ability to speak freely and have your First Amendment right? That's BS, man, because all you have to do, the threshold is so tiny for you to be able to get yourself and your words out there that really all you have to do is do it.
There's really more private, there's more free speech on private property than on public property anyway. I mean, I look at YouTube as private property in a way. A lot of progressives look at it as, oh, it's everyone's property, and they get upset if YouTube kicks them off. And I know a lot of right wingers and libertarians are the same way. If they violate the contract they signed by clicking yes, I agree, and they violate it, they get kicked off. So, although I think that more and more those kind of social networks are kicking people off for things that are not violations of anything specific, just they're doing it because the government tells them to, or they have those damn report this buttons, which I don't like. So,
which I actually used yesterday.
What'd you report? The president?
No. It was a family member who had spilled the beans on a very private thing that isn't supposed to be public yet, that you know about, but nobody else is supposed to know about it for two more weeks.
And until my birthday.
Until your birthday. And just spilled the beans, middle of the night, luckily. So as soon as we woke up, all I had to do was report it as this person is harassing me, and the post was taken off.
Why didn't you contact the person and ask them to take it off?
We did that too, but the person wakes up really late, so we weren't 100% sure that we'd be able to get a hold of them and have them take it down. So it was kind of a multi-pronged approach.
Yep. Cool. Nima, narking out his family since 2013. No, it's an appropriate use of it. It really is. Because you told the person not to do it, and that was the quickest way to get it off, right?
Yeah. Told the person not to do it multiple times. They knew not to do it, and they did it anyway. So, I mean, that's the definition of harassment, right?
Yep. I like this comment someone just posted on my interview with the Progressive. They said, that guy proved the Progressive motto. We are smarter than you, so shut up, sit down, shut up, and do as we say.
Yeah. Well, and that's their whole mindset. Like, they even project that mindset onto libertarians and freedom lovers. Like the guy, he said, so you want to implement this anarchism on everybody?
You know,
no.
And again, like, I have the answer for that now, but he interrupted me before I got to that answer after answering the first question, and he interrupted me again. The answer is no. The only difference between my thing and your thing, you know, and why I lump your thing in with the conservatives or the Republicans is y'all, you left and right statists, y'all want to do things to me. I want to not be done to and be left alone. And I don't care if you guys don't go off and have your libertarian paradise in California and turn it into Detroit. You know, I don't care. I'm fine with that. I just don't want to pay for it or be penalized for it or have my peacefully owned guns taken away because, you know, you wouldn't trust your neighbors with them in California. Or you know what it really comes down to, I think, is a lot of them wouldn't trust themselves with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of them are like, if everyone had guns, everyone would shoot people over parking spaces. And I have been fully armed, concealed carrying legally with deadly weapons, as most people in Wyoming are, and gotten into an argument with somebody in traffic who flipped me off. I did not like speed up and find him and force him off the road and shoot him. I didn't even flip him off back. Because when you're armed, I think you actually have more of a responsibility to behave decently. You know, they say an armed society is a polite society, which to liberals means, because everyone would just shoot each other if they got rude. And I'm like, it's not that. It's more like you would be more respectful yourself because you know you have that power in your pocket.
100%. Yeah. And I felt that way too. When you are armed, you realize where escalation could lead to. And it's like, what would be the point of escalating something as simple as somebody cuts you off in traffic or somebody's yelling at you? There's no need for an escalation. Would you kill somebody over something like that?
Hell no.
No. Of course not. So why escalate it if it can lead to that? And people who, I guess the liberals and the gun grabbers, they don't get that. And that's why a lot of times I think they're more likely to escalate a situation, because they feel like they can yell and talk about how they're more progressive and be judgy, because they don't ever understand where escalation can lead to. Because their escalation, their ultimate thing is, oh, I'm going to call the cops on you.
Yeah. And that guy was so quick to adopt, you know, the anarcho-capital, the ANCAP saying that I said to him about how all guns are enforced with the threat of a gun. And he got it really quick. I was like, you know, I mean, you have to think about, and I said this to him like a week ago off radio, like in when I was talking to him and he was asking me questions, I think to kind of see A, if hell no, I don't want to have these guys on my station, and B, maybe I want to have this guy on my morning show and destroy him and everything he believes in front of everybody. And I do believe that I walked away from this thinking I won, and he walked away from it thinking he won. I think he just did the pigeon thing where he knocked all the pieces over, crapped on the board, and pranced around squawking like he won. Whereas I really won. But
yeah, man.
So, you know, you really do have more free speech in private than in public, because you know, in your own house, on the radio show that you got, in on the interwebs, whatever, you have a lot more free speech than you do in the town square. I mean, most town squares, if you go down there with a bullhorn, you're going to get ticketed. You're going to get and probably beat up in some places.
Yeah, yeah. People get arrested for panhandling, like you said earlier, you know?
Yeah.
You don't have free speech in public because public, I guess liberals or people might think, well, everybody owns it and we are the government. But really, the government administers it. They consider themselves the owner, and they will enforce whatever city law or edict you don't know about on you if you're on that public property and doing something that they disagree with.
And when everybody owns it, everybody feels the right to basically hit the report button in real life, which is the snitch, which is calling up the cops and saying, my neighbor is in the street yelling thing, you know, whatever. I don't know.
Right. And at least he, the guy you had the debate with, was more honest about, yeah, I'll send people to point guns at you. But I feel like a lot of people say things like, oh, that guy was being a D, so I called the cops. Not, hey, that guy was being mean to me, so I called a group of armed thugs who are well within their perceived social rights to kill the guy with guns and are wearing full body armor. You
know, well, I really liked that this guy was honest enough to embrace the description of the monopoly of force and use it. And I hope he continues to use it on his show. I mean, I didn't think I had any chance of swaying him. I think he was upset he couldn't sway me. And I swayed the listeners, a couple listeners, because that station has an unbelievable amount of listeners. It is the liberal station up and down the coast, through about 2/3 of California. I mean, that's a pretty big audience, and they have listeners. It's Drive Time, which is the most popular shows on talk radio. So maybe somebody heard it and went, wow, maybe I should read more. Maybe this kind of makes sense. But even if that didn't happen, I hope he continues on his show to say things like, yes, we need the government to do our bidding, even if that takes pointing the gun at the head of the guy who doesn't want to pay his fair share in taxes. I hope he says that. And, you know, I hope that some person, maybe some, I don't hope, but maybe some person will report him for making threats of violence. But I mean, they probably would if Rush Limbaugh said it, but they probably won't if, you know, because there's that left right thing, and the government is. Government isn't just going after the righties this week too with the IRS. They actually went after the Associated Press, which is supposed to be the fair free speech, and it kind of leans left. But yeah, what did they do, man?
I heard a great take on it. Marcy Wheeler, interviewed on the Scott Horton Show, sort of laid it all down, and I really like her interpretation. Basically, the Department of Justice went after
injustice.
Injustice. Yeah. Went after the AP. There was this leak about this supposed terrorist attack that was going to happen. The White House was going to leak it anyway. So the White House was getting ready to leak it. The AP scooped them. somehow had the story 8 hours before the White House was able to put it out. And the White House was really bitter about this. And according to Marcy Wheeler's analysis, a lot of it was, well, the White House wants to spin things in the way they want. They want this to be like, well, look at us great government guys. We stopped this terrorist attack before it happened, and you should really love us. But instead, it came out with, you know, less spin because it's on the AP. I'm not saying the AP is spinless, but it came out from an independent from the government source, in a way, I guess, AP. You could argue that either way. And so what the government did was they went in and basically got like 40, or I think it was 20, something like that, of the lines that the AP uses, didn't tap them, but had the outgoing and incoming, I think, call records. So basically they could try to track whoever the AP was talking to try to find out who leaked this ahead of time or where they got their info. And this really puts a chilling effect on reporters. You know, it basically is trying to, in a way, stop journalism as it exists now, which I would say journalism isn't even in its healthiest point right now. But this kind of thing where reporters are going to have to worry about, hey, am I going to have to worry about the government tracking my sources? And then on the other side of that, sources, you know, the real chilling effect, I guess, is on the sources. You know, they're going to be more and more reluctant to talk to people and leak things if they know all that has to happen is the Department of Justice writes a letter and then can spy on the independent journalism outfit.
Yeah, I'm just going to keep dancing like I think no one's watching, even though they probably are. I mean, I've talked to Cody Wilson on the phone 4 times this week, and we had him on the show. I mean, I think that's got to get you on a list somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing is, if they're trying to make a chilling effect, you don't let them chill you. You know, you don't give them that satisfaction of bullying you into not saying what you want to say and not doing the work. And, you know, it's really great, I guess, that this is kind of the thing Ben Stone's about, talks about. When the state starts to show its hand, when it starts to reach its fullness, this is another sign of that, that the state is actually going after somebody who we tend to think of as an independent media outlet, the AP of all people, you know, the people that feed stories to pretty much the whole media, the government going after them. That kind of shows what the government really thinks about supposed free speech. And so maybe it's a good thing that people can see this and be like, oh my, really? Really, government? Is that what you're doing? And at the same time that the government is also saying that, hey, we at the IRS, we're going after Tea Party folks.
Yeah.
So, I view these, even though it's horrible government encroachments, it, in a way, is a win for liberty and libertarians because it kind of proves our point that the government is not us. Like your liberal friend or your progressive friend said, the government is not us and, in fact, is opposed to us and is our enemy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually answering an email someone just wrote me about Cody Wilson. Someone's trying to get me to get him to do a radio show. And it's like, and this is, I asked Cody if this was private information or not. And he's like, it's going to be public pretty soon. You can go ahead. We tried to get Cody to do a rap video too. And basically his answer is this week I am concerned with staying out of prison and probably will be for the near future. So, you know, I'd love to do some interviews, but I don't think I can. And I don't think I can do the video. And I'm like, wait, you're going to prison and you can't do a rap video? Come on, man. If you're going to be in prison, you have to have a rap video.
We'll have you record your verse over the phone.
Well, yeah, like, I told him about. Well, the first guy to do that was the Bad Brains. The Bad Brains did a song called "Sacred Love" while the singer was in. Like they were in the studio recording it. The singer got busted for pot. They hadn't put the vocals down yet, and while he was in jail, he called the studio collect and laid down the vocal.
That's great.
And it sounds like it's done over a phone. So you know, right, this is before cell phones, so or good phones.
Okay. Yep. Good times, man. But yeah, the government's coming after people. I guess they kind of always have, but maybe people are starting to notice it more. And maybe it'll flip that switch in people's brain that, hey, the government is your enemy. The government is the antithesis of liberty, to paraphrase von Mises.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Another thing I learned in the same Scott Horton show, and I don't mean to just be a repeater for him, but this was really interesting to me, and I hadn't heard it anywhere else. But there were a group, I think it was three peace activists. They were really religious, and they'd been peace activists for a long time. And I think their movement is called like the Plowshare Movement. Like they take something from maybe it's the Book of Isaiah in the Bible that you should, you know, twist your swords into plowshares. And they broke in to, I think it's called the Oak Ridge Nuclear Facility. They were able to like break through four fences. And this is where they keep the nuclear material
for thermonuclear weapons.
Three peace activists.
Okay, we don't advocate doing that. I just want to say that.
We don't advocate doing it at all.
I'm like stealing time from the fiends, and then I'm like listening, and then I'm like, you're talking about.
Yeah.
And then they bring up, what? Do I have to hit the cusp dump button here? Wait, we're not live, but I can do that later. Wait, what happened? What are you talking about?
Okay, so there's this place called the Y-12 National Security Complex. And from what I understand, it's in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And there's a building in it that holds the thermonuclear weapons or I guess the enriched uranium or something that's like really, you know, people shouldn't be able to get to it. And these three older peace activists, like one of them is a nun who's like 80 years old. They were able to cut through the main outer gate, go up a hill like 60 yards or something, and then cut through three more security fences, and then spray paint stuff on the wall or make their little peace protest. Nobody caught them while they were doing this. After they were finished with their protest, they just sat there and waited for hours to be arrested by the security at this nuclear security complex. And they got arrested eventually, and then there was a court case about it, and they've been convicted, obviously, of breaking into a nuclear facility. But A, just think about that. Think about how easy it was for these, I don't want to say geriatric, but these old people, you know, they're not like Navy SEALs. They broke in and were at the building that holds the nuclear material. They didn't have malicious intent, you know. They just wanted to make a peace point. Basically, what they're saying is, hey, we've got like 1,700 thermonuclear weapons or nuclear weapons, and that's ridiculous. And under the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, we were supposed to stop this. We were supposed to start disarming. So it's a war crime for us to have all of these nuclear weapons, and we're trying to point that out to you, the government.
Mm.
Yes, and actually, in the court case, one of the ways they were going to defend themselves was using some something from the Nuremberg trials. I forget what they called it, but basically the sense of it was it's not an excuse that you were, you know, part that you were just a citizen. You still have responsibility. If your government's committing a war crime like building or keeping weapons of mass destruction, which thermonuclear warheads are, you're still an accomplice. You still have some layer of responsibility. And so they were trying to say, well, that's us. And we were just pointing out that we're not accomplices to this, and we're trying to do our best to help the United States disarm and not be a war criminal.
I see.
But yeah, I think the security complex is called Y-12. So I'm not sure if I got all the great details there, but that was the general outline. So I guess look it up if you guys are interested.
Yeah.
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 You're too busy stealing time from the fiends. What are you doing over there?
I don't know, man. People are trying to get through, contact Cody through me. I'm being his secretary, basically, and not wanting to be.
Yeah. Well, then don't. Yeah. Relax, guys.
Well, I'm answering people's questions because it's people who I know and people who know people I know. And I'm like, come on, man. Yeah, his email.
What I do when people are doing that to me is I say, doing a live show right now. We'll get back to you later. Oh, I guess we're not live, but hey, you could fudge it a little bit. A little white lie. That's okay, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, man. Anyway, the United States government, in case you didn't know, still has thousands and thousands of thermonuclear weapons, could destroy the world many times over. They didn't get rid of them after the Cold War. They still have them. There's really no military use for them at
this
point. Yeah,
you know what? Here's how much right-wingers love war at all costs. Like, one of the only things Obama has done that made a little sense to me at all was talking to Russia about nuclear de-escalation. I think there's no reason that many nukes should exist in the world, or any, you know.
Well, do you know why they do? Why they do has nothing to do with foreign policy or public policy, really. What it has to do with is the people who make and maintain and keep the nuclear weapons. Those
the
companies. The complex, like Bechtel and Lockheed and all those people.
And whoever makes the recombinant incombulator.
right. Yeah, all of those people, that's their bread and butter, man, or part of it. You know, billions of dollars.
And now that they're making drones, can't they just get rid of the nukes and like turn them into peaceful energy or something?
No, man. I mean, that's like saying, hey, let's take this billion-dollar revenue stream away from you. They're never
Yeah, but they're not. I mean, they're not making a lot anymore. And they have a lot of, like, retro 50s and 60s and 70s bombs lying around that probably aren't. I mean, what's the shelf life on those? Do they have an expiration date? The nuclear fissionable material does not. But the mechanism, I mean, there's actually a Simpsons where Sideshow Bob steals a plane. Actually, he steals the Wright brothers plane and a nuke. And he said, and it finally he deploys it and it fizzles and like a mouse runs out in this little like mushroom cloud the size of an actual mushroom.
And there's and like an expiration date on the bomb.
Yeah, and he says like, ugh, there were plenty of new bombs there, but you had to go with the '60s retro charm, Bob.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a really good point you bring up, because that's actually part of this whole these protesters' story is right now they're trying to do some rebuilding on the plant, the Oak Ridge plant that holds the nuclear weapons. And there's also lobbyists who make and maintain the nuclear weapons that want to refurbish them. So basically, you know, go in and make them viable again. You know, and I think it's pretty much the same amount that they have now. So they want to spend billions of dollars to keep that from happening, to keep Sideshow Bob from picking out an expired nuclear weapon. And so, yeah, it's not at this point to where you can say, oh, well, those are old. Let's just ignore them. No, the people who make the money off of it are saying, hey, those are old. Let's spend billions of dollars
making
them
new.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Recycle your nukes.
Right.
That would be a good bumper sticker for someone who works for the complex. Making fun of hippies and really stating it like it is. Recycle your nukes. Yeah. That's what they want to do. So I saw something kind of scary from a kook conspiracy theory thing the other day. I guess it was being presented as not kooky, and I took it to somewhere kooky, but it was on the Weather Channel. I saw a little news piece about micro satellites, which are basically satellites that are like the size of a shoebox that are being made by grad students at MIT and being launched into orbit for free with space donated that's not being used on commercial and government rocket launches. Like if they have some space, basically you can, if you're a grad student at MIT working for the complex, you can hitchhike your little weather satellite up and they'll launch it. And I'm thinking what this may lead to is a galaxy of geostationary microsatellites, kind of like drones, but it's more like, you know, each dissident will have their own satellite hovering over their house 24/7 to spy on them.
Yeah, I don't even know if the government needs to go to that level to spy on everybody they want 24/7, man. They can do that other ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of already their intent.
When you bug your own house like we do here at the Freedom Fiends with radio and podcasting. And I think that's a good place to stop as any, unless you got more.
No, I think that's about all I got for today.
Say worms.
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 Hello, Freedom Fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share-alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Three times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.